Though it may not move the needle quite so much here in Ireland, the most watched sporting event worldwide this weekend will likely be the final of football's African Cup of Nations. By all accounts, it's been a great tournament on the pitch, but the biggest story, and indeed the most iconic image from the tournament, has been provided not by one of the players, but by Democratic Republic of Congo fan Michel Nkuka Baladinga. Sport and politics rarely make for comfortable bedfellows, but this could be a sign of things to come at this summer's FIFA World Cup. It's News Talk Daily, I'm Shane Beattie. To the uninformed onlooker, Algerian player Mohamed Amine Amoura's celebration after his last-minute winner in their quarter-final clash against the Democratic Republic seemed fairly innocuous. Amoura stood up straight, raised his arm, and then fell over onto his side. But the incident was couched in political significance and caused something of a diplomatic furore. Amoura and the Algerian Football Federation were compelled to apologise, having inadvertently stumbled into a political and racial controversy. This may not be the only such incident this year. Could this summer's World Cup be the stage for many more political statements, or should sport and politics be kept separate? Joining me to discuss all of this is David Wilson from Off the Ball. David, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Thanks, Shane.
Now, let's start off first of all with this Democratic Republic of Congo fan and why they've suddenly become so famous.
So he's kind of become so famous because during the games in at AFCON for the DRC, there's been a guy kind of dressed up as Patrice Lumumba, who is basically a revolutionary for Congo in the 60s, and he was killed assassinated in 61, and he kind of campaigned for human rights, civil rights, and for people in Congo under Belgian colonial rule. So the fan dressed up as Patrice Lumumba, and he kind of stood with his hand raised to his eye and kind of saluted for the whole 90 minutes, and he was kind of became this kind of iconic image of the African Cup of Nations, of AFCON. And yes, like you said there in your intro, it kind of became a controversial kind of topic because Algeria won that game against DRC in the quarterfinal and kind of mocked what the Patrice Lumumba impersonator was doing in the crowd. And he's obviously a legendary figure in Congo and also in kind of Central African politics.
But this guy, Michel Nkuka Mbaladinga, and I'm not fully sure how you pronounce his name because he is just a random fan.
Yeah. Yeah, just a random fan, just took it upon himself to kind of do this. And I think the AFCON is like this beautiful, colourful tournament, and it's not just what happens on the pitch, it's what happens outside the pitch. So if you see like any of the social media clips before games, it's like the players coming into the stadiums and they're all kind of singing and dancing, they're all singing like traditional songs from their countries, and it's a really eclectic, wonderful tournament that kind of brings together a very diverse and like a football loving continent in Africa. So this image of this kind of Lumumba impersonator, it kind of has become like one of the kind of iconic images of this tournament. And when Algeria scored and won that game, I think a lot of other countries in Africa kind of found that a disrespectful gesture. Mm. And then when Nigeria beat Algeria I think the Algeria DRC game was the last 16, and Nigeria beat Algeria in the quarterfinal. Nigeria kind of gave it back to Algeria at the end of the game in that 2-0 win that they had.
Back to the game between Algeria and Democratic Republic of Congo, we then have this player, Mohamed Amine Amoura, and he stands up straight, raises his arm, and then falls over. Is that what he does?
Yeah, I think he done that gesture, but I think he doesn't really realise the significance of who Lumumba was or how much he meant to Congolese people and to kind of the fight against the colonialism that happened in Africa. I think he saw this fan that was doing this kind of incredible and different gesture, and he thought he would kind of, you know, he probably didn't realize the cultural and political significance of it. So I don't have too much kind of criticism for him or Algeria, but there is a disconnect between North Africa, West Africa, Central Africa. I think the Sahara is a big dividing factor there, and it's such a diverse and complex continent that I think the North Africa can be seen as more Arab and West Africa can be seen as more African. So I think in the case of the Algerian player who scored a goal, yeah, he can criticise him, but I wouldn't be too harsh or critical of him.
But he was doing this gesture, we think, in direct response to that fan. Whether or not he knew the political significance is another question.
Yeah, I think, yeah, he was doing the gesture, but yeah, I think it's like a case of whether he doesn't realise the kind of the meaning behind it, but he maybe thought he was like, as a joke, kind of doing it. And he probably wanted to kind of, I think, you know, there was a couple of kind of spicy moments within that game. There's a couple of hard tackles, and I think he just wanted to get one back on the fans. And it's just kind of a thing that happens in sport where you get a chance to give one back, you give one back. Yeah. So I think the context, you know, there's a broader context than just the kind of political and cultural significance of that.
It does show, though, that maybe politics and football shouldn't mix, and that we maybe shouldn't have political demonstrations at football matches.
Well, I think that's impossible. I think the politics and sport, that doesn't mix. I think it's a complete nonsense. It's intrinsically linked, especially when it comes to national teams and to international tournaments. I suppose for many countries, it's your chance to show who you are on a world stage. For many countries as well, the international football team or the international sports team, whether like an Olympics or whatever it is, that's where you get to, you know, show what you're about, where you're from on a world stage. So the fact that sport and politics can't mix or shouldn't mix is impossible.
I thought it was the case that political demonstration was banned at these type of matches.
It is banned in this
officially
type of
banned.
It's officially banned in UEFA and FIFA statutes. You aren't allowed to have any kind of political ideology, political slogans, or messaging of that kind of. You can't really kind of display that from a fan's perspective or even from a playing perspective too. So, yeah, it's a fine line that they kind of have to try and balance, because obviously you are representing your national team, and what comes with that is, you know where you're from and who you are and what your people are.
So, is it more that the players are banned, or is it players and fans are banned?
Players and fans are banned. So like if a player scores a goal, he can't really do like some sort of political celebration or something like that. Fans are also banned from kind of, you know, political slogans. Now, fans will go against that, and that's what the kind of, in football particularly, kind of specific fan culture like to protest against, whether it be the authorities, whether it be the governing bodies, whether it be, you know, their own running of how their team or their national kind of governing body is run. So they'll protest against that. Like an example here in Ireland, we had like a, after the FAI kind of debacle, and when John Delaney was removed, there was a tennis ball protest at an Ireland game against Georgia. Ireland actually scored a free kick. Conor Herron scored a free kick, and next thing, all about 1,000 tennis balls went onto the pitch, and it just stopped the game. And that was just like from a fan's perspective, like a protest against how the running of the game was in the country at the time. So it does happen.
It does happen. And even I'm thinking as well, you will see, certainly in the early days of the war, you'll see Ukraine flags being brought into matches as well. You see the Palestinian flag, or even you see the way the support, for example, Bohemians would give to people from Gaza as well. So it does happen. It's very difficult to police.
Yeah, I think it's impossible to police. And I think football clubs, sports clubs, like they are sometimes maybe the cornerstone or the central point of communities. For example, here in Dublin, Bohemians are a north side club. They're an inner city club, and they like to, you know, they like to kind of advocate for people who have suffered under colonialism or under repression or under genocide or whatever it is, and they've kind of built up even a more of a following. Like Bohemians, for example, have just sold a jersey with kneecap on it, obviously an Irish rap group, and part of the proceeds of that jersey is going to groups in Gaza for sport and for music and stuff like that as well. So football is not just like 22 players in a pitch playing against each other. It's like it holds a lot more weight and significance, and people want to express themselves, and sometimes sport and football is the only kind of vehicle that you're allowed to press kind of show yourself and show you what you're about.
Now we have the final of the African Cup of Nations on this weekend. Has this incident overshadowed that? Is it making the sport feel a bit uncomfortable right now?
No, I don't think so. I think anyone that's been watching the African Cup of Nations has been enthused about what an incredible tournament it's been, not just on the pitch but off the pitch too. It's been held in Morocco. Morocco will host, will partly host the 2030 World Cup, and by all accounts, Morocco has done an incredible job with infrastructure, football pitches. Fans have had a great time. People have been able to get there. So I think by international standards, like this tournament has been a great tournament. The political thing, like. The political aspect of it as well, like Africa is such a diverse and complex kind of place, so there's always going to be that element to it as well. But I think overall the tournament has been an incredible tournament, and it bodes well for 2030 when Morocco will have the World Cup there as well.
It's really colourful is all I know about it. I'm not interested in soccer, but definitely it's really, really colourful. And you mentioned the World Cup there and Morocco. Obviously we have this summer's FIFA World Cup. Can we expect to see more political statements?
I think it's impossible that there won't be. Whether how they will be policed and how they will be allowed is another thing. Like the 2022 World Cup was the last World Cup in Qatar, and there was obviously a lot of conversation around workers' rights, around LGBTQ rights, around people going, you know, kind of traveling there safely and being able to express themselves. And that was the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. And now this is the 2026 World Cup in the US, Mexico, and Canada. And there's probably less conversations like that happening now, which is kind of ridiculous because what's going on with the recent ICE shootings, basically, of people is kind of grabbed the world's attention. Obviously, you know, the extraction of Maduro from Venezuela, the conjecture around maybe the US will go in and invade another NATO ally in Greenland. Like, I think it's going to be impossible that there won't be some sort of political protest at these games. Now, whether it comes from the players, the fans, it's hard to know, but it's going to take some brave players or coaches or some very brave fans to do it as well.
Yeah, which is mad to think the US so free compared to Qatar, and yet people still have those same worries. Or else the games will just be filled with a load of influencers who get free tickets and true fans won't get a chance to even enter the US, never mind go and see a game.
Yeah, well true fans are being priced out of it. Also fans with disabilities that need carers to come in with them, they also have to pay for a full price ticket as well, and these tickets are in the thousands of dollars. So it's really it's kind of cut off so many of the normal fans, or the usual match going fans. I'd love to go myself. I'd love if Ireland are there, but if I don't go through work, it's going to be impossible to afford to go to the US to go to games.
I was just thinking about Irish fans, and please God, we make it. I mean, it would take a very brave Irish fan to unfurl a Palestinian flag, for example, at a World Cup game in America.
Yeah, so I think what will happen, like, I've been doing some research on this in the last few days, there's no hard and fast rule yet, but what will happen in the stadiums is that the flags of your own country will be the only flags that be allowed brought in. So I don't think even like pride flags be allowed brought in, or Palestinian flags be allowed brought in. I'd say, like, let's for example, if Ireland play Mexico, it'll be Ireland flags and Mexico flags, and that'll be it. So, like, for example, I travelled to Armenia to Yerevan to go to the Ireland-Armenia match a few months ago. And basically, before the game, you get, like, information from the fan liaison officer, and they'll say, like, oh, you can bring your phone, bring your power bank. They're all allowed in. But then, okay, you're only allowed to bring in, like, your Ireland flag. So there was no kind of information regarding, like, Palestinian flags or anything like that. Now, I didn't go to the game in Budapest against Hungary, but I had friends who went, and they shared on their information packs with me, and they were saying, like, no Palestinian flags of any kind. Obviously, Hungary is very close ties with Israel. So I would imagine something like that will happen for the US World Cup, especially for the games in the US.
So the authorities will be very aware of this. They're always very aware of it. I'm just wondering, do political demonstrations in sport actually work? Do they make an impact? Have there been examples where they actually have had some sort of impact?
Yeah, I think they have. Like the Colin Kaepernick one was a momentous one in the US.
Bending the knee.
Yeah, taking the knee or taking a seat during the playing of the US national anthem. And that started in like 2016 when Trump first got into power. And, like, okay, maybe it didn't have the required effect of, like, you know, social change, but it at least brought attention to it. So, like, it's the fact where they do work or they don't work. The fact that you kind of use your influence, use your kind of celebrity to try and advocate for social rights and human rights, and social advocacy, like, that's really important. And I think there's a real lack of that, especially in sport and in football at the minute as well. Like, there's, and I'm kind of looking around there today and yesterday, like, what, who are the, like, the biggest vocal, most outspoken sports people today? And there's a lack of real high end kind of
big names.
So, like, Mohamed Salah is the most famous Arab footballer in the world, and he's Egyptian, and he's spoken out a couple of times about Palestine, but a lot of people in Egypt, a lot of people in the Arab world think that he hasn't spoken out enough, and that he hasn't used his political or his huge celebrity, especially in England and in the Western world, he hasn't used it enough. So political kind of acts or acts of kind of, you know, highlighting kind of, you know, social inequality or genocide or whatever it is, they are super important, but they just probably don't happen enough. And I think,
is it because they're not arsed or they're fearful of the feedback?
I think they're very fearful of kind of the repercussions, and many sports people just want to, you know, play their game, be successful, win trophies, earn money. Like, Mohamed Salah is earning a lot of money playing for Liverpool. He's probably in England in a political climate which is very kind of complicated at the moment as well, and he probably doesn't want to draw too much attention to himself. For example, like, Marcus Rashford was kind of an advocate he used to play for Manchester United, plays for Barcelona now. He advocated for, you know, keeping free school meals for children in the UK, and he kind of went against the Conservative government at the time, and it caused he managed to keep the free school meals, and he became this kind of advocate for young people. And then when his performances dropped at Manchester United, he was piled on, yeah. You know, and it continues to happen. When he has a bad game, it's like, oh, what happened to Marcus Rashford? It's a very, yeah, it's kind of quite hard to juggle both of those, you know, juggle a family life, juggle a professional sporting life, and to juggle a life where you try and advocate for people.
And then I think of the likes of James McLean as well, and him not wearing the poppy, and just the abuse that he gets for that, and still gets to this day.
Yeah, and I suppose on the James McLean case, like, it's you kind of think about James McLean, but you don't realise but the stuff that happens with his family and his family members, and his kids going to games, and his wife going to games, and what they have to hear and suffer from in English grounds and grounds all over the UK about where he's from and different things. So it's not just, you're not just advocating for yourself or for people that you have an affinity with, you're also putting your family members and your kind of close friends under a much more kind of close spotlight.
Yeah, in the past we've had tournaments, I don't know, the World Cup or not, where players wear pride armbands. I don't know, was that in the World Cup? Maybe it was in some of the European competitions. Mm-hmm. I don't assume that'll happen in America this summer.
So, quite controversially, FIFA have banned all kind of the use of slogans or anything like that to promote kind of, like, or to promote LGBTQ or to promote whatever that may be in the World Cup. So in 2022, they want people, some of the countries were going to wear pride armbands. Yeah. That got banned because FIFA wanted to, you know, use their own one, which wasn't using any of the pride colours. And now that's all been shelved for 2026. That won't happen in Canada, US or Mexico. There'll be no FIFA slogans where they're kind of, you know, it says, like, you know, all together or all for one. It'll just be the captain's armband,
right,
and that'll be it. So that won't be happening. And Amnesty International have come out in particular against that. They've written a big charter about, like, the lack of human rights, the lack of advocacy for kind of, you know, because sport is somewhere where people, that's their only avenue to kind of promote these things.
It's ironic, though, FIFA totally against politics and sport, and yet they give President Trump a peace prize with that silly gold medal that they gave him recently.
Yeah, which is, yeah,
invented,
which is,
the night before.
Yeah,
which is
incredible, because you had that. Yeah, Trump was obviously awarded that by Gianni Infantino, and Trump has been kind of keeping Infantino like a little lapdog all around the world. So he's been at, you know, the talks between Israel and Palestine. Yeah. He's been in Sharm el Sheikh talking, you know, to Saudi and Yemeni conflicts as well. Like, and Gianni Infantino just kind of appears there. And there was a huge FIFA Congress back a couple of months ago in Paraguay, and Infantino was meant to be there, and they were like, oh, so the whole world had turned up, like all the delegates from all the 200 and whatever it is nations in FIFA had turned up in Paraguay to kind of basically listened to Infantino, and Infantino basically turned up a day late because he'd been in the Middle East with Trump and Qatar.
Incredible.
And he didn't even tell people, so yeah. Okay,
well, people thought Blatter was bad, and then Infantino,
yeah,
maybe similar ilk.
Yeah, he is, and he's, like, FIFA is meant to look after the game, promote the game. It's not meant to be a profit, you know, organization. Mm-hmm. But what they've done now, and basically FIFA have taken over the running of the World Cup as well. That used to be the host nation's job. Now it's FIFA's job because they're extracting even more and more money out of it. FIFA are taking this money out of the game. And then Infantino is kind of using that money to, like, kind of spread it around all the nations that will vote for him and keep him in power. So it's a very, you know, and this goes all the way back to João Havelange and to Blatter. Like, this isn't just a new thing that Infantino, he's seen what his predecessors have done, and he realized what works. And FIFA, we always think FIFA's in a really bad state, but, like, now it's probably as worse as ever, because it's probably now it's at its most political. It's meant to be an apolitical organization. Now it's at its most political.
Okay, very good. David Wilson from Off the Ball, thank you very much for joining us. That's it from the podcast for today. You can listen back to every episode of News Talk Daily on the Go Loud app. And for me, Shane Beattie, bye-bye.